Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
So far, we've covered the major developments in the lives of Lee Harvey Oswald, his wife Marina, and their baby June since they arrived from the Soviet Union in Texas. We've also done an in-depth examination of all things George de Morenschild, whose many intelligence connections are not disputed. And while there's no single smoking gun document that proves that de Morenschild was working on behalf of intelligence agencies when it comes to Oswald, he did admit to Edward Epstein hours before his death that he went to meet Oswald only after speaking with J. Walton Moore of the CIA. De Morenschild told Epstein that he thought debriefing Oswald about his work in Minsk was what J. Walton Moore wanted him to do, and he thought if he did that, it would help him get an oil contract in Haiti, which he did, in fact, end up receiving. In this episode, we turn our attention to Ruth and Michael Payne, the married couple who will go on to become central to the story of Lee Harvey Oswald. We'll cover the circumstances that led to Marina and June moving in with Ruth, the FBI's reopening of Lee Harvey Oswald's file, and the background and personal connections of Ruth and Michael Payne.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
I don't know what this is all about.
Dallas police this morning resumed questioning the man they have formally charged with the assassination of President Kennedy.
I'm just a patsy.
The man is Lee Oswald.
Was Oswald acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? Commission answers, he acted alone.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. On March 2nd, 1963, Lee, Marina, and baby June moved to 214 West Neely Street, which was about a block away from their current apartment on Elsbeth Street. The rent was $8 cheaper per month, and it had an extra room, which the family would soon need since Marina was pregnant and expecting her second child in the fall. Shortly after they moved into Neely Street, Marina received a letter in the mail from Ruth Payne, which had been forwarded from the Elsbeth Street apartment address that Marina gave Payne at Everett Glover's party where they first met. In the letter, Payne asked permission to visit Marina. Marina responded that Ruth was welcome to come by and provided the address to their new duplex on Neely Street. Ruth first visited Marina on Tuesday, March 12th. During that visit, Marina confided in Ruth that she was pregnant. Ruth responded by telling Marina that she needs a friend. 8 days later, Ruth stopped by Neely Street to visit Marina for the second time. The following week, Ruth's third post-Glover party interaction with Marina was when she picked up Marina and June in her car and took them to see the Payne's house in Irving, about 13 miles north. Ruth and her husband, Michael, had recently separated, with Michael moving out of the house, leaving Ruth to take care of the couple's two children, Lynn, who was 4 years old, and Christopher, who was two. On April 2nd, Ruth invited the Oswalds over for dinner. Despite the separation, Michael Payne picked up the Oswalds at their Neely Street home. He told the Warren Commission that the date of this dinner party was April 10th, which, if true, would give Oswald an alibi for the General Walker shooting that he is accused of. We'll cover the Walker shooting in an upcoming episode. Ruth continued to pursue this friendship with Marina, inviting Marina, Lee, and June to have a picnic in the park on April 20th with Ruth's two small children. A few days later, on April 23rd, Lee bought a Greyhound ticket to New Orleans for a bus that left the next day. When Ruth Payne dropped by unannounced at Neely Street on April 24th, she noticed that the Oswalds' bags were packed. The plan was for Lee, Marina, and June to all move to New Orleans together while Lee looked for work. Since Ruth was already there and had a car, Lee asked her if she could give the family a ride to the bus station, and she did. At that point, Ruth invited Marina and June to stay at her house while Lee was in New Orleans looking for work. Marina accepted her offer. Lee then got a refund on Marina's bus ticket, and Ruth Payne took Marina and June back to her house in Irving to live with her. Here's how Ruth Payne described her relationship with the Oswalds in a television news interview from 2 days after the assassination.
Mrs. Payne, how did you first become acquainted with the Oswalds?
I met them through friends at a party last winter, and then saw more of Marina later. I was interested in talking with her because I was trying to learn the language. Then later, they had financial difficulty when he lost his work, and eventually led to my inviting her to live with me in Dallas while she was waiting for her baby that was born in October, and to stay on a couple of months with me, just as one woman with another can help when babies are small. And then I think they expected to get an apartment together when they could afford it, say after Christmas sometime.
So after Ruth Payne met Marina and Lee at Everett Glover's party, she had only 5 interactions with Marina. Still, she invited Marina, who Ruth knew was pregnant, and her baby June, to come live with Ruth and her two small children. Much like George de Morenschild, one can question Ruth Payne's motives because it seems implausible that she would invite a pregnant, unemployed stranger to live in her small home where she already had 2 kids living with her. Unless she was just a really nice person who was looking out to help others in need. That's possible. But just like de Morenschild, I wasn't able to find any other documented instances of Ruth or Michael Payne ever having similar charity cases with any other people. In episode 39, we talked about how retiring FBI agent John Fain closed the FBI's file on Lee Harvey Oswald on August 30th, 1962. From that date until March 14th, there was no file open on Lee, but Marina remained on a pending inactive file, which meant that the Bureau took no action on Marina for 6 months. The reason the FBI was interested in Marina in the first place is because she came to the U.S. from the Soviet Union. In March, the end of the 6-month inactive period was up. This meant that it was time for Agent Hostey to interview Marina. When Hostey went to do the interview, he learned that the couple had recently moved from Elsbeth and they were having marital problems. For this reason, Hostey decided to wait a while before he spoke to Marina, But Hostie did go ahead and do a routine check on Lee's file, which somehow continued to accumulate information even though it had been closed. When Hostie checked the file, he found that Lee had made contact with the Daily Worker magazine in New York, according to the FBI's New York office. Hostie told the Warren Commission that he decided to go ahead and reopen Lee's file because of this magazine subscription. So the FBI reopened Lee Harvey Oswald's file for the thought crime of subscribing to a particular magazine. This is important because with the file reopened, the FBI would continually monitor and be aware of Oswald's activities from mid-March 1963 up through the day of the assassination, November 22nd. There are dozens of FBI reports on Oswald during this window of time, which shows that the FBI was serious about keeping up with Oswald. The implication of this revelation that Oswald was actively being watched in the lead-up to November 22nd means that either the FBI was grossly negligent in failing to stop Oswald from killing President Kennedy, or the FBI could have been monitoring Oswald as a potential informant. In April of 1963, about a month after Lee's FBI file had been reopened, Oswald wrote an undated letter to the Fair Play for Cuba Committee headquarters in New York. His letter requested that they send him more pamphlets to his P.O. Box 2915 because he had already handed out all the ones that they gave him. Fair Play for Cuba, or FPCC, was a pro-Castro organization that advocated for American non-intervention in Cuba. Basically, it was a pro-Cuban anti-war group. The only way that we know about Oswald sending this letter to the FPCC is because FBI informant T2, who we later learned was Postal Inspector Harry Holmes, was reading Oswald's outgoing mail. Holmes is the one who told Agent Hostie about Oswald's FPCC letter. The way that Holmes was monitoring Oswald's mail raises the question of how could Harry Holmes not know about Oswald receiving a rifle in the mail just a few weeks earlier if he's monitoring all of Oswald's outgoing mail. Hey everybody, Matt Crumpton here. When I'm not researching, writing, or recording, one of my favorite ways to relax is with federally legal THC from Mood.com. This stuff doesn't come from a lab. It's pesticide-free and grown on American farms. You can get 20% off your first order using the code JFK. One of my go-tos is the functional gummies from Mood.com. These gummies only take 15 minutes to feel the effects, and you can choose all kinds of different moods, from creativity to pain relief to just plain old relaxation. Everything comes right to your door and is discreetly labeled. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, you also get 20% off of your first order using code JFK. So head on over to Mood.com and find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. Remember, use code JFK for a 20% discount.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.
One of the hardest parts of analyzing the JFK assassination is being able to sort through real connections that may be relevant to the case versus interesting coincidences that aren't really a big deal. When it comes to Ruth and Michael Payne, there are many of these ties and connections that could just be incidental, Or, when you put them all together, they could also be seen as not just random, but part of a larger plot. The question for us is whether these connections can shed light on the motives of Ruth and Michael Payne. According to a declassified CIA memo, Ruth's father, William Avery Hyde, was under consideration for covert use by the CIA in Vietnam in 1957, but Hyde wasn't actually used by the agency. He had previously worked for the Office of Strategic Services during World War II, which was the predecessor to the CIA. That same year, Hyde wrote a letter to an affiliate of the International Cooperation Administration asking for an assignment that would allow him to use his time, quote, more adventurously. Payne added, quote, "And if your international contacts tell you of any opportunities abroad that could use a man who has been long immersed in insurance and consumer cooperation, I would be interested in hearing of them." In episode 39, we talked about George de Morenschildt's work for the ICA. Technically, William Hyde's work was with the Cooperative League of the U.S., which was an affiliate of the ICA, while de Morenschildt worked directly for the ICA. But both of them were working for the ICA in 1957. The fact that de Morenschildt and Ruth Payne's dad were both involved with the ICA at the same time doesn't prove that they actually knew one another. But then we also have the House Select Committee on Assassinations testimony of Joseph Dreyer, who worked with de Morenschildt in Haiti. When Dreyer was shown names of potential associates of de Morenschildt by the HSCA and asked which ones he recalled de Morenschildt interacting with, Dreyer selected only William Avery Hyde and one other person from the list. So according to Joseph Dreyer, Ruth Payne's father did know George de Morenschildt. And that would make sense, because in 1962 and 1963, William Hyde was working for the Agency for International Development, which, in the 60s and 70s, maintained a close working relationship with the CIA, and CIA officers often operated under USAID cover. In fact, the former director of USAID, John Gillian, said, quote, "At one time, many AID field offices were infiltrated from top to bottom with CIA." In the Clay Shaw trial, Ruth Payne testified that her dad worked for Nationwide Insurance in Columbus, Ohio, but he was sometimes on loan to the International Cooperation Administration, and after that, to USAID. So that's Ruth Payne's dad. Her brother-in-law, John Hoke, also worked for the sometimes CIA-connected USAID. But maybe even more significant than that, a 1993 declassified CIA security document establishes conclusively that Ruth's sister, Sylvia Hyde Hoke, was employed directly by the Central Intelligence Agency for many years, including before and after the assassination of President Kennedy. So when it comes to Ruth Payne, she has a father who worked with OSS, the CIA's predecessor, who was considered by the CIA for a covert role, who personally knew George de Morenschildt, according to Joseph Dreyer, and who then went on to work for USAID, which sometimes served as a CIA cover. Her sister was employed by the CIA, and her sister's husband worked with her dad at USAID. What about Michael Payne? Does he have any ties that could potentially raise questions? Maybe a few. Michael Payne is a descendant of Robert Treat Payne, one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. His mother, Ruth Forbes, was from the Boston Brahmin Forbes family. At the time he met Oswald, Michael Payne was working for Bell Helicopter in Fort Worth. Not only did Michael work there, he had a high-level security clearance, partially because his stepfather, Arthur Young, was the inventor of the Bell helicopter. Now, Bell helicopter would go on to become a huge enterprise after the Huey helicopter was heavily used by the American military during the Vietnam War. But perhaps more important than any of those links is Michael Payne's mom's best friend, Mary Bancroft, whose affiliations are sure to get your attention. Mary Bancroft was an officer in the OSS during World War II, just like Ruth Payne's dad. During that time, Bancroft began an affair with Alan Dulles, who was looking for spy recruits in Europe. According to Bancroft's obituary in the New York Times, during their second meeting, Alan Dulles said to her, quote, "It should work out very well. We can let the work cover the romance, and the romance cover the work." The remark might have seemed startling considering that the subject of romance had not been mentioned, but Mr. Dulles was as perceptive as his recruit. The logic appealed to her, and so did he, the New York Times concludes. Dulles and Bancroft continued to stay in touch after World War II. It's a close call as to who has more intelligence connections between Michael and Ruth Payne. Michael's status as a high-level military industry contractor whose close family friend had indisputable ties to the very top of the CIA probably gives him a slight edge. Either way, with all of these uncanny links, you can see why people jump to the conclusion that Ruth and Michael Payne were both some sort of assets of the CIA. We have to remember that the mere connection to these people doesn't prove anything other than that they knew one another. It may prove opportunity, but not means or motive. So what else do we know about the backgrounds of Ruth and Michael Payne? There's an FBI report from Frederick Osborne Jr. and his wife Nancy, where they basically serve as character witnesses for the Paynes. They talk about how the Paynes are good people. It turns out that Osborne's father was a close associate of Alan Dulles. They graduated from Princeton together and co-founded Crusade for Freedom, which was similar to Radio Free Europe and ultimately merged with it. There are numerous letters in Frederick Osborne Sr.'s files at Princeton to and from Alan Dulles, but maybe it's just a strange coincidence that the Payne's character witness knows Alan Dulles and Michael Payne's mother's best friend was his mistress. On October 23, 1964, about a month after the Warren Report was released, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover wrote a letter to Warren Commission Counsel J. Lee Rankin urging him to not release FBI memos and reports related to Michael or Ruth Payne or George or Jean DeMorenshiel because, quote, "making the contents of those documents available to the public could cause serious repercussions to the commission." A few years after the assassination, during the trial of Clay Shaw, New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison tried to subpoena the tax returns of Ruth and Michael Payne. But Garrison wasn't successful in obtaining their tax returns. When he tried to get them, he was denied access because he was told that Ruth and Michael Payne's tax returns were classified. Garrison also subpoenaed Marina Oswald to testify. Marina was asked whether she still saw Ruth Payne now that it had been several years since the assassination. Marina responded that she was advised by the Secret Service to avoid Ruth Payne because Ruth Payne is affiliated with the CIA. There's one more piece of background information to consider. Roy Frankhauser claimed that he worked as an undercover agent. He told the HSCA that he had met Michael and Ruth Payne in 1960 when he infiltrated the Socialist Workers' Party. Frankhauser said that he, Ruth, and Michael Payne were all undercover agents. Now, this sounds like a slam dunk to tie it all together and establish that Ruth and Michael Payne were undercover assets. But it turns out that Roy Frankhauser is an extremely questionable witness. Before he testified to the HSCA, Frankhauser was the Grand Dragon of the Pennsylvania Ku Klux Klan. He told the HSCA that he was infiltrating the Socialist Workers' Party on behalf of the governor of Mississippi. He also claimed that Ruth and Michael Payne tried to recruit him to a paramilitary leftist organization that wanted to assassinate Birmingham, Alabama police chief Bull Connor and President Dwight Eisenhower. Now, I went down the Roy Frankhauser rabbit hole to try to find any corroborating facts or witnesses. And while he may be saying some things that could end up being true, I don't believe anything Roy Frankhauser is saying about working with the Paynes. For such an iffy witness, we need to see some level of independent corroboration, and with Frankhauser, there is none. Still, even if we completely throw out Frankhauser's HSCA testimony, which is what we should do, in my opinion, the associations of Ruth Payne with intelligence agencies through her dad, her sister, and her brother-in-law, combined with Michael Payne's high security clearance at Bell Helicopter and his mom's best friend's connection to Alan Dulles, plus this memo from J. Edgar Hoover and the classified tax returns, means that we have to consider the possibility that the Paynes were not just your average suburban couple. Next time on Solving JFK, we turn our attention to the infamous backyard photograph. Was it real? Was it faked? How many were there? Was it someone else? And why does it matter? If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free, select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.